Hello and welcome to It's Lit, where all things literary live at the root. I'm Maisha Kai, managing editor of The Glow Up, and today we're joined by not one, but two guests, writers William Evans and Omar Holman. William and Omar are the co-founders of the website Black Nerd Problems, which they created in 2014. They're also both established writers and poets, William having founded the Writing Wrongs Poetry Slam and also having been a national finalist in multiple Poetry Slam competitions. Omar is a distinguished alumnus poet of Rutgers University and is the author of the poetry collection, We Were All Someone Else Yesterday. Together, Omar and William have published a new collection of essays called Black Nerd Problems, and it is a super fun, super engaging read. I loved reading their takes on blackness in comic books, television, movies, and so on, but loved even more getting to hear it in their own voice, both in their audiobook and in our conversation. These guys are so smart, so funny, and so wonderfully nerdy, and I really hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. So with that, I give you William Evans and Omar Holman. Omar and William, welcome to It's Lit.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
This is exciting. I'm excited to talk about some Black nerd problems and to be welcomed into the nerddom, because I think what you all have done here with this book, you know, which is based on your podcast and blog, like, you know, I think you've kind of leveled the playing field here for us in terms of what it means to be a nerd. You really, you know, as you've communicated, there are levels to this. But before we dig into those levels, we do have a ritual here at It's Lit. Just like your work, this is a podcast about Black thoughts, Black books, Black thinkers. And we always like to start each episode by asking our guests, was there a book or books that was influential or particularly inspiring for you, that was like a game changer in the way that you thought about writing and ideas? What would be that book for you, Omar?
I think it'd be two. Ronald Wimberly's Prince of Cats retells Romeo and Juliet's story from Tybalt's perspective in Brooklyn. And also Gary Jackson's poetry book, Missing You Metropolis, which has like a lot of like, it references a lot of like comic books and like pop culture, especially really comic books. And I'm doing poetry and such a nerd of stuff. And like, and I have friends that knew this man. And I'm like, yo, y'all know this guy and know me and then tell me about his work. I feel offended. Like, so those two books were like really like, yeah, they made a whole difference. Like one in like, you know, because it's a graphic novel, Prince of Cats. So to see that in like comic books is something I love. And then to see like a poetry guy, a poet doing something that I was doing at the time, or do whatever, to see those, like these two dudes influence, these things on that scale and both using these like nerdy things that I like in literature in a way that I like, I was like, this is entirely different.
I think for me, and it doesn't feel like it's nerd, but I think it still qualifies in that probably the first time I really started getting into reading Toni Morrison. And because I don't think, and granted there were other books out, but for me personally, I don't think that I had a grasp on what we could do with Black imagination in a written form. And because so many narratives were constrictive of how Black people were portrayed or the interior lives of Black folks, if we even got that, right? And I think with Morrison, and, you know, obviously, like, for some folks, like, Octavia Butler did this, right? But for me, with Morrison, it was our lives depicted sometimes in a way that was outside of the realities that we encountered. And that was very exciting to me, just because for my own personal readership at that point, I don't think I really experienced that. So I think most of the stories I would have assumed that centered us just did not have as much imagination to them, right? And so I think for me, it was Morrison and starting to dig into some of those books really just kind of let me know, as you know, corny or whatever it sounds, that like anything was really possible, right? Especially for us and for so many of us as writers, as Black writers, the constraints that, you know, like academia or schools or whatever kind of put on us and our imagination about what we should be writing and what we should be caring about.
Now, that is, you know, we've heard Morrison referenced a lot on this podcast, Williams, sure. But I have to say, you know, I love that answer so much. I think this is actually one of the more comprehensive answers I've ever gotten about Morrison in terms of Black imagination. I think that's I mean, that's a huge talking point here as well. And I love how you kind of bridge that gap. And I also, you know, love how it ties to your work here, because Black Nerd Problems to me is all about Black imagination and kind of stretching the boundaries of what we think of as Blackness per se. Because it's not just about nerddom. I mean, I think I might be paraphrasing a bit, but you say through nerddom, all connections are possible. And one of the things I love here, these like very direct through lines that you guys make in terms of what it means to be a nerd and this, you know, hilarious terminology that has morphed over time, but also the intersectionality of nerddom and Blackness, which is something that is specific and nuanced. And, you know, I say this as somebody who, you know, full disclosure, was not familiar with the podcast prior to the book. So I really dug in, and I even did myself a favor and listened to the audiobook version because I wanted to hear these dynamics in play. But you guys met doing poetry, correct?
Yes.
I mean, this is how you guys came into each other's lives and started this whole thing and started to, pun intended, geek out over certain things. Obviously, running a podcast together, even building something together, is different than writing a book together. So how did this process unfold for you guys?
I mean, I think for us, it was, you mean the process of writing the book itself?
Yeah.
I mean, so Omar and I have been running the website for, I mean, at that point, it was probably at least 5 years, right? Before this book idea came about. And, you know, I've kind of said this before, and that like the first time like a book idea was brought to us, it was like, for real? Like, y'all want, really? A book? And, you know, I think one of the things that we sat with was, okay, if we're, you know, we've been approached to write a book, and what does that mean? What would that look like? And I think, you know, even both of us being authors, and like, I had just published a book, or I was in the process of about to publish a poetry collection on this same press, when we were approached about this. And it really was like, okay, what are our ideas about what a book should look like? And frankly, how can we break that, right? As far as like a nonfiction account. And so it had to be authentic to us. It had to be our voice. It had to be our style. And also just keeping it, you know, 9,000, like, okay, we're going to be published on the big press. Like, we Black as hell. Like, we cuss, we make these references. That's not a thing that we can compromise in our language specifically. And that was like the big thing on the table. Like,
that's what it's going
to
be.
And I don't want to say that to say that we got pushback on that. But like, when we went into that process, like, okay, so I don't know what the editing going to look like, but like, you know what I'm saying? If I leave the G off the, like, y'all got to roll with it, right? Like, you got it. That's how we speak. And so I think for us, that part of it in terms of like visualizing what we look like in a book form was probably one of the harder parts of just making sure that we could stay authentic to ourselves. And then it was just like, all right, so now that we do that, like, what are our bangers? what are our banger posts, whether they're, we're pulling them from the website or some new stuff we wanted to work on. And I think as we started to flesh out, then we started to kind of fill holes. It was like, oh, wow, I haven't talked about this yet. And I didn't talk about it on the website. So this would be perfect for the book, because, you know, I'll let Omar take it. Like, we wanted to, there are obviously some archive stuff that we had written, you know, years ago or previously that we were like, okay, if we put out a Black Nerd Problems book, this has to be in there. But we also wanted it to be fresh in terms of new stuff that we're bringing to the table.
I was going to be a weak link. That's all I know. I was like, nah, ain't going to be me. I ain't going to fuck it. We were out here writing 20 pieces each. And like, all right, we'll do 20 pieces each and then we'll take 10 from each other. Man, it's fun. But it's also like when we got together in D.C. Because Will's in Columbus, Ohio. I'm in Brooklyn, New York. So we got together and it's, a lot of people ask like, well, what, you know, there's certain things like, oh, you didn't talk about like Ghost of Tsushima, like the game you love. And I was like, oh, well, it wasn't on my mind at the time. Like, that was like my stress reliever when writing this book. So I didn't bring that into this book. But like, it was a lot of like, okay, what pieces fit here? Does this make sense? You know what I mean? I got a cutting room piece about Peter Parker being the best rapper in Marvel Universe. It didn't make the cut. You know, saying for the greater good, it didn't make the cut. Yeah. You know? But like, but yeah, it was like, all right, well, not only what things sync in the book, does it make sense to you, but like also with each other? Like, all right, well, Will's talking about The Wire here. I might reference that a little earlier and like, oh, he's fleshing it out more because he's talking about TV. So like little things that interconnect between each other. And also like there are parts where we're writing between each other as well. Like Will says a line, I say a line, and going back and forth, which we've basically done. Like it's like you're watching us talk with each other, not at each other. So, and if you're in the reader, you don't feel like you're being like talked at, you're like part of a conversation that's happening, which I think is a really great thing about how we both write.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is really a conversation and it's a fun one. I mean, you know, it's not all fun and games though. I mean, you were bringing this book together during, as we know, one of the most pivotal moments in our lifetimes in terms of discussions of race in America and a global pandemic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, and this ongoing trauma that we're all kind of living through. And one of the things I did find really unexpected and compelling, and this is probably because I was not as familiar with the platform, but the fact that this wasn't just a conversation about, you know, things that, you know, like these very niche kind of things, like whether it be anime or, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or, you know, there were also these very intimate and I think, you know, emotive conversations about being Black in America and nerding while Black, cosplaying while Black, all these things that, you know, we know exist, we experience on a day-to-day basis, and we experience them so frequently. I think we just kind of like, you know, like it's just, we kind of shrug. In terms of kind of bringing that element into it, I guess what I want to ask is, you know, did it feel like a huge deviation to kind of like all of a sudden take this kind of like very serious and very emotional turn into some of these topics?
Not to me. this everyday life, baby. What did Sam Jackson say? What did Sam Jackson say to Leonardo DiCaprio when they were on the set of the Django? Like, this is a Tuesday for us, man. You're going to have to get it together, baby. I'll know what you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, that's the kind of thing I guess I was getting at. It's like, you know, it's like, we take these things for granted. But I guess when I'm thinking about, like, you know, your audience, it's like, I was looking at, William, you had an essay about, you know, being at this convention and you're going to buy this sword, right? Like, you know, you're looking at this sword and tying it so directly to an incident of police brutality, another state sanctioned murder. And you do kind of like rattle off this list and you're like, well, look, you know, this is like every day. Yeah. And it's kind of this, it's this moment in this otherwise, you know, this book that has a lot of levity, a lot of, you know, really hilarious and borderline ridiculous moments that is this kind of, it actually, I think, very parallels the Black experience in America. Maybe that's what I'm saying, is that, you know, we know that we live with a lot of joy and a lot of humor, and, you know, but we also live with this constant threat, this constant awareness. And I just thought to myself, I was like, wow, what a strong correlation to have in this moment where you're doing something that's entirely recreational, entirely interest-based. So I was just interested in how fleshing that out, you know, for this and having that conversation, like how that played out for you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a couple answers I have to that are one, you know, I don't know that we don't have to prove this thing, but I think it's important in that we are three-dimensional, you know, 360-degree human beings, right? And so we didn't necessarily, I mean, Omar and I write about these things, right? We write funny stuff. We write stuff that's, you know, that borders on absurdity and stuff. But we also, and this ties back to the website, we also write about things that are deeply personal to us that may have a strong nerd connection and maybe they don't, right? Or have the faintest hints of it. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that showed up in the book as well, because that's been in our writing previously. I think the other thing, and I do this in a lot of my writing, whether it's in nonfiction or poetry or whatever, as being Black in America, I don't want people to ever forget that there is an interruption of violence always looming in the background.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that incident where I go to the convention and like, it is an interrupting thought. Like I am basking in the joy of this very geeked out environment. And I'm just like, ah, man, like someone got killed for this, for less than this. And it is so ridiculously commonplace. And I think even, you know, whether it's a meta for the book or just in that essay, I am very strong believer of being like, yeah, y'all see us laughing and joking now, but like, I feel very much that like, if I'm going to go, you know, pick up my daughter later on today and a cop turns from a side street behind me, there's a breach of anxiety there. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't want people to ever forget that because I live with it every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to ever think that that's not a thing. And so I think that's one of the things I really wanted to show up in the essay. And I think hopefully it shows up in the book that way, where we are, you know, the big thing I want people to get away from the book is that Omar and I are having a very good time, right? You know, talking about these things and sharing them with the reader. But at the same time, our life is in there.
Yeah.
And part of our life is like recognizing the social dynamics that go on around us. And so I think it was important to both of us to have those elements, you know, exist within the book.
We knew that like it wouldn't just be like Black folk reading the book as well. And so I think for me, what I like about it is like, oh, like if you're reading this book and you're, let's say you're non-Black POC or you're a white person, whatever, it's cool. Like, all right. But like, oh, wow. Like just for going to think of like buying a prop cosplay sword or whatever, you have this looming over you. Yeah. Yeah. This is like, despite what you may believe, racism and like profiling can come in every which way, even in this nerd game, man. Must be nice that you don't have to think about this, but this is the reality we live with. This is the reality your friends live with. This is the reality of other nerds of color live with. I made a meme a really long time ago about, you know who Miles Morales is, right? Like Peter Parker.
Spider-Verse, yeah, yes.
Peter Parker talking to Miles Morales, and Peter Parker's like, all right, so Spider-Man 101, you got a spider sense that alerts you to danger. And Miles saying, does it ever turn off? And he's like, no, it's just supposed to, why would it be, wait, for you it's on a lot because, yeah, like, you're Black. Because that is what it's like, man. You're always conscious of these, like, you always have to be conscious of that, even if you want to enjoy, like, this nerd space where, like, oh, man, it could be relaxing, but in the back of your mind, like, I can't get too relaxed because, you know what I'm saying? Right. And that was really important to have I'm really glad element that we have in a book. Like, yeah, it's fun, but, like, we gonna touch on the parts that aren't so fun as well.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, I mean, well, you touch on a lot. I mean, the scope here is huge. I mean, you touch on everything from, you know, Mad Men to Hamilton to, you know, Mad Men to X-Men. We're doing the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I love that because, you know, while I'm not a comic book person, like I watched Mad Men from front to back, you know,
you
Hamilton.
Too.
I'm a musical theater nerd. So I'm like, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, so like, this is a conversation I can have. And, you know, and then there's also these critiques. I think, you know, we here at The Root go through the exact same thing, you know, as a culture editor here at The Root. This, I think the representation conversation is really interesting when we talk about Black criticism. Like that was one of the things that really struck me in this book, because it's something we go through here at The Root all the time. Like, who gets to critique Black art? How are we able to critique it? And because there's this dearth of representation, there always has been, right? You know, are we obligated to unconditionally support things? Mm-hmm. And I love that it came up here because I think, you know, it's a conversation we have to keep having in order for the art. I think we have to mm-hmm. critique our art for it to continue to improve. And I don't think that a lack of representation is an excuse to have, you know, a whole universe of Tyler Perry movies. No shade. Anyway.
Is there, oh my God, is there a Tyler Perry cinematic universe?
Technically, yes. Yeah.
Is it connected?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, I didn't know that. Is there, okay. Please, we do not have to keep talking about Tyler Perry. But a question I do have, is there like a Thanos of the Tyler Perry? Like, is there a big bad that exists across like multiple movies?
Wouldn't it be Madea?
Madea?
Oh my God, yeah. Madea. Yeah. I feel like I walked into that one, but I also have like no Tyler Perry knowledge.
See, there's an essay for the next
book,
right?
It really is.
You know, I think I have to point out, so, you know, our listeners know that we tape these mm-hmm. interviews over Zoom because we like to try to have as much of a face-to-face conversation as possible, as much as Zoom will allow. And I have to point out that Omar is wearing a really genius shirt right now. Storm.
Yeah.
Yes, this is hot. It's Storm. I'm going to try to describe this as best as possible. Basically, it's Storm giving a weather report. Storm as in X-Men Storm. And of course, this brings us back to a deep debate that has been going on for years and years and years.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. And you get into it in the book. And I love it because, you know, I love it. I love it with all the light skin love I can give it.
Okay. I know what it's going to ask it. And I just want to do a little preface before Will answers.
The chapter is called For Dark uh-huh. Girls Who Never Get to Play Storm. Mm-hmm. And I have two questions here, you know, because I think this is such an ongoing debate. And by the way, I agree with you entirely. Who would we like to see?
Okay.
Oh,
my answer is Rustina Wesley. I believe she's in Queen Sugar. She was on an episode of Arrow. That's where I first saw her. Hopefully I'm saying her name correctly. Okay.
Rutina, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, yeah, she was in True Blood, too.
True Blood as well.
And mm-hmm.
Or the lady from she was in American Gods. She played...
That's my answer.
Yeah. Oh, my fault.
Oh, no. Go ahead. That's my first answer. Yatidi Badaki. Mm-hmm. That would be my number one. Mm-hmm. Didn't someone just get cast for Wakanda? Was it Michaela Cole?
I'm not sure.
I think she did. But Bakagi is still my number one. I mean, so in terms of like just answering your question about or speaking about that, Storm is the big one, right? Like Storm is the big one.
Let's
like
go.
Storm is such an avatar for like Black women superheroes, right? Like if you can't, there's like, even people that don't know anything about or are not interested in superheroes whatsoever, if you ask them to name five Black superheroes, like Storm is going to be on that list, right? And even I will admit that the skin tone debate is really brought on by what the movies have given us. And like, here's also like, if we're going to keep it so 100%, like, the chapter is about Storm. Man, we could talk about the MCU.
Come on.
Because every time they introduce a Black woman who is a love interest of someone else,
mm-hmm.
she ain't dark. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. She ain't dark. And we know that is a Hollywood thing, right? We know that as a discrimination against darker women, right? Like you.
Yeah, we just saw this, right? With The Harder They Fall, we just saw this.
Oh, dude. Oh. Ooh. Ooh.
I didn't even see that
check my
yet.
Blood pressure. Ooh. Do I want to talk about this? No, man.
Let's get into it. It's not in the book. We can do it.
So here's, and I like as a performer, I like Zazie Beetz a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to tell me Regina's King characters, is it Trudy? Yeah, Trudy in the movie, right? If you want to tell me that Stagecoach Mary, I'm sorry, I'm giving spoilers. I hope y'all seen it. It's been out for like a month.
Oh man,
it's been out.
I'm gonna make it vague, but okay. You'll get it. If you're telling me that Stagecoach Mary can beat Trudy in a fight, okay. But you ain't gonna tell me that Zazie Beetz is beating Regina King in a fight. So that's a problem for me.
Yeah.
That's a real problem for me.
Yeah.
So that was the bigger problem than
but it ties into that, right? Mm-hmm. It ties into that because
it does.
Because you have made her character the more virtuous one, the victorious one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, she
the more desirable yeah. one.
The desirable yes. one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I thought mm-hmm. it was kind of weird. And again, you know, it could go a lot of different ways, but like, even there's like a hint of a romantic relationship between like Regina King's character right. and Idris, but like nothing on the level of, you know, Jonathan Majors AGB. So it's weird because that's the only real affection that we have in the movie. And so, yeah, you've made her the desirable one, right? The one that's in a romantic involvement with the protagonist of the film. And she's the victor. Mm-hmm. And the only one, even when you look at all those photos, like, no one looks exactly like, you know, the original person that these people were. But she's
but
the one
Aisha
that's
Aisha Hines was right there.
Was right. Oh, my God. Like, it was a very deliberate choice was made. Uh-huh. So
yes.
I think... You know, when we're talking about this, and it usually comes down to, is this person going to be in an affectionate situation on screen?
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Uh-huh. That's a problem. So I think that is that is a Hollywood issue. That is an MCU issue. That is a media issue, period. Right. So going with Storm, then you go to Storm, and then Storm's an icon, right? Storm's an icon, and, you know, the title of that essay kind of just befits, like, the whole mythos of it, of just, like, why aren't darker-skinned women given these opportunities, right?
Right.
And, like, we know what the answer to that is, but really is saying, this needs to stop, this needs to be addressed.
How long do we have to have that conversation? Because we've been having it for a minute, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this happens, I mean, and you would think with the amount of scrutiny that is instant and present on these kind of things, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. there'd be a change. And like, The Harder We Fall kind of proves that. Like, you know, like, it wasn't that long ago we went through this with Zoe Saldana and Nina, right?
Yep.
So like, you would think, and especially in this day and time, like we get casting news so early. Right. Like, I don't know what it looked like. I can't remember what it looked like 10 years ago, but it wasn't this, right? We didn't hear about someone getting cast for a role, you know, a year before the film, uh-huh. you know, gets like shot and then mm-hmm. another year and a half mm-hmm. of post-production. Like, we never had this information this early. And so you would think there'd be more scrutiny on this. And obviously it kind of proves we're just not there. Mm. We're just not there.
I mean, I think that's fair. I think that's fair to say, you know, as an assessment, but it's not fair in the general scheme of things,
absolutely
you know.
Not,
for the record, my choice would be Michaela Cole as well. Mm. I'm also a huge fan of Sheila Team, who's in Bruised opposite Halle Berry.
Yeah.
So, you know, which brings us full circle with the Storm moment. Another woman I'm not sure should have played.
Pour out some. You know, after years and years.
I love Halle.
Here's where I'm at. Here's where I'm at with it. I think I wrote about this a long time ago. I think it's a situation where back then, Holly can't really say no to that role.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know
you're
what right. I'm saying? Like,
yeah. It's the Catwoman. Yeah,
she can't. Right?
You could have said no to Catwoman.
But let's keep it real. Holly couldn't really say no to that role either. Like, she could now.
Yeah,
and like, right. I think even actresses that are not of Holly's stature. Right, because mm-hmm. who was it that turned down Shuri to be in
Amanda Steinberg?
Yeah, like there is much more agency, and like, and I think the bottom line is one, you can recognize what the social climate of the thing is, and two, like Steinberg got other gigs coming,
mm-hmm.
right? And like, not that Holly didn't have other gigs coming, but that was like when she was Storm was at the time the biggest role she'd ever had, right? Mm-hmm. Like we've made cult classics out of things that Holly was in, but like there was never something that had the kind of budget that X-Men did when going into it, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So
right.
I have softened on the fact that Holly had to take that role. Like, they were like,
even if it maybe should have gone to Angela Bass.
Oh, it's absolutely, oh, yeah. absolutely. But I mean, and it's funny because Holly's obviously older now, right? Because yes. we're so many years yes. removed. But we ain't even talked about ageism, right? So mm-hmm. like,
right.
That's a whole yeah. other thing. I think about that now, of just being like, Holly kind of had to take that role because I'm quite sure they were not like, okay, so Storm, we need someone who was a former African goddess, queen, you know, all these other things. We need to nail down all these things. We were like, we need a really pretty black woman. Who is the really pretty black woman that we can get to be in this movie? Oh, Holly Berry. Like that's right. that's probably right. how that happened, right? Now, she was terrible in it. I love you, Holly. She was terrible in it. And it was written terribly and everything else like that. Like the wheels fall off. But I do think she kind of had to take that role in the time.
Okay, fair assessment. Now, Omar, I have a question yeah. for you. And this is for you specifically.
Oh, man.
Because, you know, you were very passionate in the audiobook version of this chapter. And I it's funny because this film that I'm about to reference comes up in the subsequent chapter. But are you really going to tell me that you think you could survive Candyman?
Oh, the horror film shit? I thought I was going to be Cars 3. I was like, I didn't mention Cars 3 in this. What okay. Oh, surviving horror? Yeah. You'll put me... I have yet to see the new one, but if the premise is still the same, that I got to be alone in a bathroom in front of a mirror saying his name 5 times, that's the easiest one to avoid. I ain't doing that shit. I ain't doing it. That's not me. That's not me.
Like, Omar's like, you need to follow a different character.
Exactly.
Because oh, I'm right. not the dude.
You can tell me about this. You can tell me this thing happens. And when I don't see Kareem the next day, like, oh, I guess he did that shit. There's my proof. Like, I don't need to be there for. It's the same premise with The Ring. Oh, you watched this tape. Stop that. It's 2021. I'm not watching a VHS tape. Was someone alive to even convert it to DVD? I'm not watching that. Is it streaming on platforms? I'm not watching that. Nah, the premise is done. Nah. No, sorry.
It's streaming on Apple, and I'm already capped.
I can't get Apple now. Nah, man. I got too many subscriptions. Now, I can't. No, sorry. Nah.
You know what I love about this conversation is it really does demonstrate that there's such a broad scope of nerddom to mine here in terms of pop culture. There's so much here for us to dig into, and I really. Highly recommend that people get into this book because I do think it's something for everyone. Because I kind of approach it like, okay, I mean, I'm nerdy about some things, but I mean, I did not expect to feel mm-hmm. spoken to in this way. So here's the question. I mean, you know, granted, you just put this out in September, but what's next for Black Ooh. Nerds and their problems? What's next for you guys?
Did the website, you did the book. I mean, I feel there's one more media that we could try to conquer into, but the NDA says differently.
I mean, I think, you know, I think we definitely, like, in any shape or form, we definitely want to do more with video.
Mm-hmm.
Video content, things of that nature. And I don't know. I think there's just so much more to mine, right? I think kind of like... In terms of subject matter, but also how we do that. So in terms of we do more streaming and things like that, because I always said this about our group, Black Nerd Problems, like the writers that we have on staff. And, you know, I would hope that this applies to Omar and I as well, in that like our strength is in our personalities to be out in front of folks. And I think we have a lot of fun doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think the writing does that a lot, but Omar and I get complimented or we get the comment on folks just seeing themselves represented in us, right? When we go out here and be our full nerdy selves. And so just trying to find more ways to do that, because I do think it's been really uplifting to see folks identify with it in this way
mm-hmm.
and not scared to put themselves out there in this way.
Mm. Thoughts? Anything to
add? Well, Lois says everything I'm thinking. I just look pretty and nod like, yeah, that's it. What else you want? What else you want, huh? In the meantime, get these storm memes. You get these great ass articles for the website. You get these videos from Tiffy Starchild. You can watch us streaming, baby. Yeah, we on Twitch too. Whole week on Twitch, man. That's what you want. What do you need? What do you want? We can do it for you. We can get it. Ooh, this is a Diddy reference to that video where he was slamming the phone down, talking about how he's got to get it. He's a savage. We nerd savages.
You're like
out
the
here.
Ultimate hype man.
Yeah, that's
the
right.
ultimate
that's,
hype yeah, man.
I mean, so basically, we could be looking at the beginnings of, you know, we're seeing the beginnings of the BNP cinematic universe. It sounds like
very accurate.
Well, I'm here for it. I'm here for the book Black Nerd Problems, and I'm here honestly. I'm here for leaning into my black nerddom. This really
please do
it.
Brought me to some places. I hope I'm now considered an honorary black nerd.
Absolutely.
I do not know how to play spades, so there's that.
You're not missing out. Let me tell you something.
William Evans and Omar Holman, thank you so much
for joining us. Thank you so much.
This conversation has been hilarious, and I'm so glad that we made it happen.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The Root Presents It's Lit is produced by myself, Maisha Kai, and Michaela Heck. Our sound engineer is Ryan Allen. Our theme song was penned by yours truly and producer Scott Jacoby. If you like the show and want to help us out, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps us out, and we appreciate your feedback so much. Now, if you have any thoughts or feedback, you can always find me on Twitter at Maisha, that's M-A-I-Y-S-H-A, and at Maisha Kai on Instagram. And before we go, we always like to talk a little bit about what we're currently into. You know, and since it's the holiday season, I've been giving you guys gift ideas, and I treated myself. This is the season to treat yourself. Tis the season to treat yourself. I think that's how I'm going to say it. Yes, tis the season to treat yourself. And I treated myself to a huge, amazing cookbook called Black Food. It's edited by Bryant Terry. And, you know, listen, we know in our communities how important food is and how culturally specific it is. And I love this book. I love the history. I love the recipes. I love the cover, the graphics. And I think, you know, if you're looking for something special to give or to get, Black Food is the book for you. So I highly recommend. But that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week. In the meantime, you know what to do. Keep it lit.